Hello. Sounds like it's breaking up a lot. Does it to you guys?
A little bit.
Hello.
I think we might have to. We all might have to mute our phones.
Should we put it on mute, like the six mute?
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, hello, this is Jay in Tampa.
And this is Dave Meyer.
Hey, Dave.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hi. We have a pretty crowded call tonight. I want to start here by getting attendance to see who we've got present. Do we have Kevin Daly?
Yep, speaking.
Very good. And Francis Monaco?
Yep.
Rochelle Kunick. Krunick. No. Selena Sanchez. No. About Matthew Kadushin. David Agoff. Our role here. Phyllis Rennie or Riney.
It's Riney. Yes, here.
Very good. Phyllis Riney. Good. Mm-hmm. Gary Gassaway. But Gita Kerniff. And Ronaldo Stover.
Yes.
James Rowan. Deborah Galley.
I am here.
Good. And Tanya Darnell.
Here.
Lynette Eggers.
Present.
Good. Debbie Gilchrist.
It's Deb, and I'm here.
Hey, Deb. Ron Morris.
Yes, sir.
Good. Tammy.
Here.
Trudy.
I'm here.
Heather.
I'm here.
Sarah.
I am here.
And I heard Jay, right?
That's correct. I'm here.
And this is
David.
Do
you guys hear the echo?
Yeah.
So if you do not hear the echo, that means it's you causing the echo. So if you don't hear the echo, would you please hang up and then dial back in? Let's see who I missed here. Rochelle Krunick?
Here.
Very good. Selena Sanchez? Matthew Kadushin? David Agoff?
Here. I'm right here. Hello, folks.
Very good. And Gary Gassaway?
Yeah, I'm here.
Very good. And James Rowan? All right. So I'm missing three people. That's really pretty good, sounds like. I'm missing Selena, Matthew, and James. Any whose name I did not call. Okay, good. Well, welcome to the Art and Science of Using DISC. This is Dave Meyer. I'll be your instructor for the next six sessions. This is going to be a very exciting class. Something DISC is phenomenal to learn. It's great for your business. It's great as a tool to use in your everyday life. You should have received several things from me in the last couple of days here. One, of course, is the access code for your own DISC profile. And most of you guys have completed those things, so I know those got out okay. If you've not yet completed your DISC assessment, please do so as soon as possible. If you don't see it in your inbox, please check your spam filter for spam folder. It sometimes gets dumped in there. Rare, but it does happen. You also should have received from CTA the DISC Coaching Catalyst, which is the workbook we're going to use throughout the class. Hopefully you all received that and have started doing your reading. The third thing in there I sent to you guys separately is the class syllabus. And that tells you what we're going to cover each week or each session in class. Again, if you don't see that in your regular email, please check your spam folders because sometimes, especially with AOL accounts, it gets stuck in there. Because attached to that syllabus was a copy of the slides for today's session. So you'll see what we're talking about and be able to take your notes on there. If you did not get a copy of the syllabus or the notes for first class, and you can't find it in your spam filter, please send me an email, and I'll send it back to you separately. Okay, questions so far? Did someone just join us?
Yes, I joined.
And this is?
Robin McGregor.
Robin McGregor.
That's correct.
I don't have you on my list here, Robin. You must be a recent addition.
I believe that I am today a recent addition. I called to find out and didn't get a response, and then I emailed, and I just got a response before the meeting started.
Okay, very good. I'm still looking for Selena Sanchez, Matthew Kadushin, and James Rowan. Okay, all right. So as we go through the material of the next six sessions together, you guys are going to have some questions and things in your mind you want to ask about that are related to DISC but not necessarily on target. I would just ask that you look at your syllabus first and see what the appropriate time is for that question so you don't go too far off target. All right? We've got about 20 people here for this class, so we're going to have to limit our discussion a little bit to some questions at the end of class. Now, before I get too far, I hate to do this in my first session here for you, but I'm heading off to a funeral on Wednesday in the evening, so I may be a few minutes late getting on the call. If I'm late on Wednesday, it's not because I'm abandoning the class. I just have to get to a telephone after the service is over. So if I'm a few minutes late on Wednesday, please excuse me. All right. So let's jump into today's material. We have a lot of ground to cover in our first session here. So if you look at their slides I sent to you, the slides for session one. We'll start with the history and background of DISC. And it's really important as we go through our syllabus for each session, you guys do the reading in advance of class, so we can have a discussion about the topics you have questions about and know what to expect. So do you guys, before you got to today's reading, did you have any preconceived notions about where DISC might have come from?
Mm-mm. Yes, I did.
You did? And where did you think it came from?
No, I said I had a question about where it came from. I had no idea where it came from. Yeah.
Okay.
Before I read the readings.
So, of course, if you read the material, you saw that the DISC concepts came from the work of Dr. William Moulton Marston. And his book back in 1928, which was called The Emotions of Normal People. Now, the operative word here is normal, because what you're going to discover is that DISC is not a psychological tool. It's a behavioral tool. So people have disorders of some type psychologically. DISC may not work for them. That's okay. Dr. Marston did not create the assessment that we use. That was done in a much later time. But while Dr. Marston is given credit for creating the material around DISC, it actually goes back much further than that in our history. It goes back to time before Christ with Hippocrates. And what is Hippocrates most famous for? Anyone know?
Hippocratic Oath.
The Hippocratic Oath, exactly. That doctors take this as first, do no harm. But Hippocrates viewed people as falling into one of four categories. He called choleric, sanguine, phlegmatic, and melancholy. And those relate actually to our four DISC terms we use today. So the term actually goes back, you know, thousands of years, the basis for what we do use on DISC. Now, I mentioned before that Dr. Marston did not create the actual assessment. That was actually done at a much later time. In 1972, so we'll come back to that in a few minutes here. But when Dr. Marston wrote his book, he did not write it the terms we use today. He wrote it in terms of how people viewed the environment that they lived in and their ability to control or not control what happened about them. And they also viewed the environment as being something that was really positive or something primarily negative. So Dr. Marston's work that he used, which created the assessment much later, is not a one-for-one correlation, but there is a direct relationship there. And you can actually sometimes use the original model as opposed to today's model, to help figure out where someone is. I'll explain that more thoroughly in just a few moments here. But Dr. Marston was also famous for some other things besides his book about normal people and emotions. Dr. Marston was also famous for his invention of the theory behind the lie detector. And in addition to that, he had one other passion that he and his wife pursued that you've also probably heard of, because he and his wife together invented the character Wonder Woman. So as you can imagine, Dr. Marston was a fairly advanced thinker for the time, 1928, but he and his wife believed that women were much more powerful in the environment than they were given credit for, and so they invented Wonder Woman to help show the power of women and how they should be used in society. So, just a little background about Dr. Marston. So, I mentioned there a few minutes ago this original theory, and you'll see in your slides the model of Marston's theories, and you can see it's also a four-quadrant model. And he said, some people see themselves as being more powerful than the environment around them. Those folks are on the top portion of that model. Others are less powerful than the environment around them. In the bottom portion of that model. Likewise, some people see themselves as being working in a basically unfavorable environment, the left-hand side of that model. And some folks think it's a pretty good environment. That's the right hand of the model. And I mentioned before there's a direct correlation or a correlation between these original theories of Dr. Marston and the ones we use today. And you're going to see the correlation between this model and the DISC model in a few minutes here. But when you think about people around you today, do you think of people who consider yourself, yeah, they consider themselves to be more powerful than the environment or less powerful? See that people around you today? I'm going to guess that you do. Likewise, you're going to see some people as being, think that they live in a good environment. Things are generally happy and good and they're content. Others see themselves as being in a place where they're not happy, they're not content, the world seems to be conspiring against them, and they view it as a very negative place to live. So if you look at those four quadrants there, how they combine, you've got people who say to themselves, I am more powerful than the environment around me, but it's primarily an unfavorable environment. That's that upper left-hand quadrant of the model. And these people take a view of the world and says, this is not a great world, but I am more powerful than the world around me, therefore I can fix and change things. Now, other people sit there and say, yes, I am more powerful than the environment around me, but it's primarily a favorable environment. And most people are sitting there saying, wow, it's a great environment, and I'm more powerful. They're going, wee, life is good. Those folks are in the upper right-hand quadrant of that model, more powerful and favorable. Now, on the less powerful side, some folks say, you know, the environment is what it is. I can't change things. I can't impact things. But I'm lucky it's a pretty good place to live overall. Things are working out pretty well. That's that lower right-hand quadrant, and they say to themselves, I think things are okay. I need to make sure things stay okay. Protect the status quo. Don't let things change. Make sure I'm okay. Now, the lower left-hand quadrant, people think that they are, again, less powerful than the environment around them, and it's primarily a negative environment. These folks say, oh, things are not good, and I'm at the mercy of the things around me. I better find a way to protect myself from bad things happening if I want to be able to survive. So that's the way Marston originally wrote his book and his theories about how people view the environment around them. And you're going to see here in a minute or two how that correlates back to our current DISC theory. Are there questions so far?
No.
Good so far? All right. Let's move on to the evolution of DISC. I mentioned before that this was actually created back in 1972. Now, my guess is many of you guys don't even recall 1972. I'm pretty sure I'm right there. But for those of you who can recall 1972, how is different today versus 1972? What are some big changes we've had in the last 40 years or so?
Hair.
Hair?
Internet. Yeah. Technology.
Technology is a good answer, too, for my case, but technology is a a more universal response than hair is. How is technology?
I don't know.
How has technology changed in the last 40 years?
Well, it's opened up the world. There's everything's out there in open book now.
Yeah.
You know, things were happening in 1972 that if they were happening today, we would know more about them than we did in 1972.
Yeah, especially true back in 1972 with what was going on in the world at that point in time.
So, I think at that time things were just starting to really, you know, the whole, everything, the media was in everybody's, just starting to get in everybody's drawers.
Yep, exactly true. We didn't have personal computers back in 1972. Computers were consisted of huge machines, row upon row of huge machines, locked in a big protected room at big companies with air conditioning. We didn't have computers at home, certainly. We didn't even have, in 1972, word processors. So we had typewriters. We didn't have correction fluid back in 1972. Okay? Now,
the eraser with the little fan.
Pardon me?
The eraser pencil with the little fan brush.
Yeah, we did have some of those, you're right. This is really a bad dream at this point in time. So back in 1972, when they created this thing, it was very much a manual process to do the research and the analysis of how they created the model and how they actually began to score the assessments. They did change the model somewhat, talk about people being much more active or aggressive as being more powerful than the environment, and people being more thoughtful or reserved versus being less powerful than the environment. They focused on a task orientation rather than a negative kind of view of the environment, and a people orientation instead of a positive view of the environment. So they used those concepts that they pulled from Dr. Marston's work, but not 100%, to create the four-quadrant model and the actual assessment. Now, assessment, of course, has changed between 1972 and today, especially the administration of it. As you guys saw, I sent you guys an access code. 10 minutes later, you had completed your assessment and the report in your hand. In 1972, you filled out the assessment. You mailed it back to the University of Minnesota. They scored it by hand and wrote a report for you based on your behavioral styles. So that's changed today with computers. You get things much faster and much more accurately today. They have gone back a number of times and updated the assessment and the words that we use on the assessment and revalidated the information on there. But the concept that they used back in 1972, the concept they use today are actually very similar to how they first created the model. Now, they intentionally built this assessment as what's called a forced choice assessment. You guys took it. You know, they just had to sit there and say, this word is most like me and this word is least like me. And you had to make that choice. It was a forced choice. You couldn't say to yourself, well, they're all kind of like me, so I just want to check all the boxes. Nope, get just one, check one most and one least. That was a force to make a response they could begin to measure. And the concepts that they've used in DISC since 1972 forward have not changed until recently in terms of how they actually do that measurement. Forced choice has been the model of choice for over 40 years. Now, you'll notice up there today, though, if you go out in the marketplace, you'll see a lot of tools that look like DISC but really aren't DISC. You've probably seen the reports that sit there and say, what kind of animal are you? Are you a tiger? Are you a bunny rabbit? Are you a zebra? Are you a giraffe? Or flowers? Or colors? Now, these are all reports and assessments that are very similar to DISC. They're actually based on the DISC concepts. They merely change the presentation from the DISC to animals or flowers or colors. They're based on the very same sets of theories, though. And the reason for that is that the material from that was done back in 1972 is now considered public domain. So people are creating their own assessments. The problem with that is that if they don't have PhDs on staff to constantly reanalyze and revalidate the results, society can change, and the profiles don't change. You can find yourself being off with today's behavioral styles. So the material we use here is from Wiley Publishing, Inkscape Publishing, and they have PhDs on staff who constantly monitor and revalidate the material.
So many beautiful works of art, but some that have really stood the test of time. So we can hear the
wall. I guess somebody back there has got the TV set on in the background. If you could just either turn that down or mute yourself. By the way, if you need to get muted for some reason, star 6 will mute your phone, and then star 6 will also unmute your phone. All right. So in today's DISC world, we have on top of the model the active behavioral styles. On the bottom half, we have thoughtful. On the right side, you can see the word accepting. You can also see the word people orientation. That works just as well. Left-hand side, say questioning. You could also say a task orientation. Either of those concepts and ideas works in today's DISC model. So to walk through, as we walk through the other model, when people are active, top half, left-hand side questioning, those are the high D behavioral styles. And that D stands for things like driver, direct, decisive, even dominant. And those people tend to be results-oriented. They want to get things done, and they want to get things done quickly. Likewise, the upper right-hand quadrant, people who are, again, very active, but very task-oriented, very people-oriented, that's the high I quadrant, the upper right-hand quadrant. The I could stand for influencer, interactive, or interested in people. They tend to be very outgoing and a lot of fun, kind of the life of the party. On the lower portion of the model, you see the word thoughtful or accepting. I'm sorry, accepting is on the right-hand side. Thoughtful is on the bottom. That lower right-hand quadrant, first the high S, which stands for steadiness, can also stand for stable and secure. And finally, that lower left-hand quadrant, where again they are thoughtful or more reserved, but more question or task-oriented, that's the high C quadrant. And you can see there, that would stand for conscientious, could also stand for compliant, or control, and those folks tend to be rule followers.
Right.
So let's take a moment now and kind of reflect back between this model and Marston's original model. So the D, we said, is active and task-oriented, relates back to I'm more powerful than the environment, I'm active, and it's an unfavorable environment. I'm task-oriented or questioning. Likewise, the upper right-hand quadrant, where it was more powerful and a favorable environment, now relates back to active, and accepting or people-oriented, and that's kind of a high I. Those folks who view the model, the environment as being less powerful than the environment around them and primarily a favorable environment, that relates back to today. They're accepting and thoughtful, therefore they're the high S. And last but not least, people who had the unfavorable environment and were less powerful relate back to people who are more quiet and thoughtful today and question or task-oriented, the high C, conscientious. So you see those two models are not the same, but they do relate back to each other pretty clearly. Nod your heads. Okay.
Nodding.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are there questions so far? Okay. So if you looked at the syllabus, you see where I get into this much more deeply in upcoming sessions. But that's a quick overview of how the basic DISC model works. A lot more depth coming up starting actually on Wednesday night as we get to our D's and our I's. But that's the overview. Now, it's really important that as we begin to study the DISC model and what DISC can do for us in our environment, our workplace, our home life, that we also understand what DISC does not measure. Because as you saw, DISC is small and self-contained. So you saw, you see in your notes there that DISC doesn't measure things like intelligence, desire, values, very important, emotional intelligence, political beliefs. And it's really important to understand that DISC is a phenomenal tool, but it is just a tool. It's not something that's going to encompass everything about everyone. So if you start to hear from people talk about DISC, they say, well, I don't want you to put me into a box. Yeah, we don't put you into a box either. Dr. Marshall would say that people are all different, but in some key ways, they are predictably different. What we're doing here today with using DISC is measuring those areas that are predictably different. So thinking to yourself here for a moment, what else do you think of that DISC might not measure through its little profile?
Like the effect of the environment around you and how that influences you?
Yeah, today's environment around you may be impactful in a way. It can't really measure that, sure. What else?
Hello, it's Guy to psychological issues.
Tell me more about that.
In the sense of schizophrenia, depression, people suffering from any of that, it's like schizophrenia, depression, any kind of mental illness, that's
right.
More a therapy intervention that's required. And obviously that would have an effect on your current, how you view your current role or your personal life or your schooling.
Absolutely true. Great example. Because DISC is not a psychological tool at all. If you have some challenges mentally or that have caused you some problems that way, it can't measure those things. Really very important.
IQ or EQ.
Very good. The intelligence, the education, doesn't measure how smart you really are. Because now people tend to think they're smart because they have certain characteristics. But you can really be any of these four quadrant profile types and not be smart or be very smart. It doesn't measure your talents. Just because you're a high I does not mean you can sing. Trust me. Okay? It also does not measure your physical or mental disabilities, if you have any. It's about your behaviors, and to an extent, to a level down the reason behind those behaviors, but not deep enough to be a psychological tool. All right, questions so far? Y'all still with me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We're still
here.
Yes.
All right. Now, in your handouts, you see there, I've got the three disc graphs. And I want to explain to you about the three disc graphs and how they're used and why they're important. Now, we got to get real honest here and tell you that there are a lot of theories about the value or lack of value of these three disc graphs. The three disc graphs are generated from the way you respond, of course, to the assessment. We'll cover how that works in just a minute here, but it creates three distinct views. As you can see on the chart in front of you, in this particular case, the three views are consistent in size and shape. Not identical, but consistent. And if you look at your own personal profile, you'll find these three graphs back on the last page, page 23, of your own assessment. And one of the things I like about this particular assessment, the DISC Classic you guys took here, was I can see all three graphs very easily. And I can look for a consistent size and shape. And it's important those things are consistent to know if the person, if the results I'm getting are, first of all, accurate, if they're in any way skewed because of challenges that the respondent is having. So we'll cover this more thoroughly in a couple of minutes here. But that consistent size and shape, as I see them here, says to me, I got a good profile. I got a good assessment. This person knows who they are, what they're trying to accomplish, and I can trust my results very thoroughly. When those things are different, I'm going to say more depth in a minute here, it tells me some challenges I have to think about in dealing with this individual. So as you move forward with DISC in our world here in the next six sessions, you'll see these three graphs mentioned several different times. On some of the newer material that's come out with DISC in the last couple of years, these three graphs no longer exist. I don't have that view into how that person's behaving right now. That's why I like this particular assessment, what's called the DISC Classic 2.0 you guys took, because it does tell me very clearly if these things are consistent or not. Okay. I'm going to cover here briefly how the scores are calculated for DISC. We'll do it much more thoroughly in session six. But just for the moment here, I'm going to show you how they're done so you can see how the three graphs are created and what they all mean. So as you took your personal assessment, you were asked to identify in a group of four words which words were most like you, and which words were least like you. And what they do is, and you can actually do this by hand. I'll tell you how to do that a little later on in our, say, session six. They actually go through and count the number of words that you chose for words that were most like you that are D-type words, I-type words, S-type words, or C-type words. You'll also see a star there on that little chart. That's because there are some words on there that don't fit any of the four categories that are put there as a control. But since you had to answer 28 questions and said, these words are most like me, you should have 28 most answers that are either D, I, S, C, or none of the above. Likewise, you responded to 28 words you said were least like you. The same thing applies there. Some of those words were D words, some were I, some were S, and some were C, and some were none of the above. But those who said were least like you are plotted in that second chart there that says least. And then literally, we're going to take the most responses from each category, B, I, S, and C, subtract away the least responses for D, I, S, and C, and create a difference. Those three calculations, the most, the least, and the difference, create those three graphs we saw on the prior page. So let's walk through that slowly, because graph one is commonly recalled to, it's commonly called the mask. So when you said, these things are most like me, that created the mask. And the mask is what you show to the outside world. So people look at you and they see the mask you've put on. And as you've done that, you can sometimes adapt your behaviors based on your environment, maybe based on your job, what you're doing at home. If you're in a customer service role, you want to be, you know, you want to be very pleasant and outgoing and helpful. And maybe that's not your natural behavioral style. Maybe you're not really all that helpful. But you have to be in this job. So you have to find a way to adapt your behavior. So these ones that are most like you, that create this mask, are most likely to change based on your current circumstances. And the question you have to ask yourself is my mask who I really am, or is my mask an adapted behavior? So, what do you think happens if your mask is not who you really are, but is really an adapted behavior?
Peter, I think you suffer from conflict within yourself.
Yeah, you could have some internal conflict inside yourself. You are saying, I'm behaving in a way that's not natural for me. And at the end of the day, if you had to do that all day long, you come home exhausted because you had to act differently than you wanted to act all day long. Now, I used the example before, customer service. Let's change that a little bit. Let's say you're a nice, friendly, outgoing person. But you've been put in charge of a team of people who need to have a lot of direction and need to be, in your view, need to be constantly challenged. Well, that may mean that you're going to be changed the way you behave from natural outgoing self to much more directed personality or behavior. You might be able to do that, but it's a lot of work for you.
Mm.
Or suppose you're a very outgoing person, and you have a lot of friends, and you like to have a lot of good time, and suddenly you're in charge of accounting, which requires a lot of detailed work, a lot of pouring over numbers, a lot of sitting there by yourself analyzing things. You might have the aptitude to do it because you had good grades in math and you studied accounting, but it's hard for you to not be more engaged with people. So you can do that job, but you might come home and find yourself exhausted because you had to work by yourself all day instead of with people.
What if your
make sense to you guys?
Yep.
Graphs are not that different.
Pardon me?
What if your three graphs just aren't that different?
If they're not that different, that likely means that the person you are in public and the person you are in private are in sync. It's a very, very positive thing. Because, I mean, it likely means you're happy with what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you like your boss. You can still hate your boss. That's okay. But you like the kind of work you're doing. Okay?
Okay.
Let's move on to graph two. Now, graph two is based on your least responses. These are the words that are least like me. Now, this graph represents the things that are basically learned behaviors from your youth, your early mentors, your early reward systems, and over time, these are the ones that are least likely to change. The reality is, most people, as they take the profile for the assessment, and they answer the least ones, those ones they have the strongest feeling about. I'm definitely not like that. That word definitely doesn't fit me.
Mm-hmm.
On the positive side, they make a good choice. On the least responses, they're much more inclined to feel very strongly about those. So these will least likely change. And these are the ones, this is the behavior you're going to revert to under stress or pressure. So when they're all three consistent in your three graphs, under pressure, the same person you are all the time. If that graph two is changing, that may mean under pressure you behave differently than you're behaving at other times. Revert back to your core values, your core beliefs, if you will. And that's how you act under pressure. So when I look at graphs over a period of time, same person, I may find graph one changing, oftentimes do. I seldom see changes in graph two. Graph two only really changes if something traumatic has happened to me and changed my view of the world, which is really pretty rare. Questions about the core? Okay. So graph three is called the mirror. And it literally is, as we showed earlier, graph one, most responses, minus graph two, least responses, gives you the mirror. It's a combination of the learned responses and your expectations. And this is how you view yourself. So graph three, it's a graph that most disc companies will tell you is the important graph to look at. Because graph three is, they say, who are you really? You really are graph three on a regular basis. So again, this can change, you know, since it's a result of graph one minus graph two. If graph one has changed, graph three might change as well. How much depends on exactly what has happened and how you responded. So it's called the mirror. It's a reflection you have, and this is the key graph that you're going to use throughout your studies of DISC to determine your behavioral style. Okay? So let's look at a few of these together. You'll see one next slide under called comparing the graphs. This, by the way, is a real person that I pulled from people I've given DISC to over the years. Notice how differently all three of these graphs are shaped. But also notice how in all three cases, the D is still the highest.
Hmm.
But inconsistent shape tells me that something's going on here with this individual I need to pay attention to. So if I'm using DISC in a one-on-one coaching situation and I see this graph, I wonder what's going on in their life that's causing them right now to have such consternation in their life. Now, the next page is another example of, again, three very differently shaped graphs. Again, this is a real person. In this case, all three primary styles are different. In one area, the D is highest. In one area, the I is highest. In one area, the S is highest. So this is a wide disparity in the graph. When I get results like this, I know something is seriously wrong in that person's life at that point in time. Now, don't worry about the results, the actual DISC, much as I worry about what's going on right now that's causing them challenges. So when you have all three graphs available, like you do in the DISC Classic, you can see this kind of analysis and see, is my person consistent, stable, and happy, or are they facing challenges right now? The ideal situation is all three graphs are the same size and shape. That's ideal. When there's a variance, that's when I have to worry about it. Questions about the three graphs?
Is the one that's highest, is that what you, is that mainly what you would call consistent?
Is the one that's highest what you call consistent? I'm not sure I understand the question.
Okay. Is when you look for consistency, is it with one, like in the first graph, is the top, the D is the highest all the way to the third, all three?
When they're consistent, you'd like to see a similar shape on all three. It won't be identical, but maybe you'll see a very high D, very low I, a high S, and a lower C. So it's kind of a zigzag, but all three graphs will zigzag. Or you'll see what looks like a big check mark, a low D, a lower I, a higher S, and a high C. So it's like a check mark formation, but all three have a similar check mark look to them, those are consistent in size and shape.
Okay.
Okay, make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So in the documentation, because I don't have a copy of the presentation right now, I'm just kind of following through with the material that was sent as a link in the PDF. It talks about overshift. Is that what you're referring to when you say all the things are high, so they're all above the midpoint, or am I misunderstanding?
Well, that's a good question. We'll get to actually midpoint. We'll get to that overshift in a few minutes here. Or actually, it's a different session, but we'll get there.
Okay. Never mind then. My apologies. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, but overshifts happen when all four things are above midpoint, which is just not normal. So when I see an overshift, I go, oops, I got a problem here of some type. All right. Other questions before I go on?
Now, you said the way the assessments are working now, will we probably see all three or no?
So I use this one right here, DISC Classic 2.0, because it's a phenomenal teaching tool, because you can really see all three graphs, you can see the DISC. Some of the newer reports that are out are really nice and really informative, but they're a circle with a single dot. And those don't tell me if I've got a problem there or not. I still use them for the right people. I like this one better, personally. Now,
okay.
I'll also tell you, when I do these with people, this DISC Classic 2.0 is also cheaper for me to administer. So in real life, what I often do in real life, I use this DISC Classic 2.0 to understand what people are really all about. As I get deeper with them and more depth on their coaching sessions, I can then change the model to the circumflex model, find out new information, once I know all three graphs are consistent.
Mm.
Okay.
So if I bring you on as a client and I give you an assessment and I see right away there's a problem with the three graphs, I go, oh, I got a problem to coach around here. And I'll coach around that for a period of time. When we get the person making progress, we can reassess them, see if they're all consistent, and say, okay, we've solved those challenges. As we go on then, I can use the other models for them, some of the things, knowing they are now consistent and know what the real style is. Okay?
All right. Now, in a future session, are we going to see one of the, what do you call the circle one?
Yeah, I'll show you one actually for session 6.
Okay.
Time there because we're really about learning how DISC works.
Right.
And this one here really shows the inner workings of DISC much better than the circle does.
Right. I was just wondering if we'd see one in the future. I knew we wouldn't tonight.
Yep, I'll give you one. Actually, for session 6, I'll give you one to look at so you'll see what it looks like. They're really nice. Great color.
Okay.
All right. Let's look at the Johari window. Who knows the fascinating history of the Johari window? Anybody?
Well, it's not Middle Eastern, though it sounds that way. It's after two guys named Joe and Harry.
There we go. Two guys named Joe and Harry. How sad is that? It's not a great story. Yeah, Joe Tufts and Harry Ingram, back in 1954, created this. And I like this picture here because what it does for us as coaches, it helps us talk about coaching and DISC at the same time. So if you look at the nice little four-quadrant model, the upper left-hand corner is the arena. That's the area that we can work in together to communicate more effectively. It's what you know about me and I know about me that allow us to communicate effectively. So part of our goal in coaching with one of our clients is to help make that arena bigger and bigger for what they know about themselves and we know about them is getting clear to both of us. So that top man up there bent over says others, that's kind of the coach's view of the world, whereas the self would be the client view. Okay? Now, the client has things that are hidden from the coach. It could be intentional, could be unintentional, could be just haven't got there yet. But there are things that they know about themselves that they have not, that you don't know yet. Maybe it's some childhood trauma that they have, or some what they're going through at work right now, whatever it is, they know it, and you don't know it. That's referred to as the mask area. As you coach with somebody and get more depth into them, learn more about them, that mask area becomes definitionally smaller and the arena gets larger. Likewise, blind spots. Those are things that I, as a coach, can see about my client that they don't see about themselves. Maybe they're being unnecessarily stubborn, or maybe they're way too forgiving. Whatever it is, I can see it, but they can't see it. And as I coach them and bring out what's behind their motives and behind what they're doing, they're going to learn more about themselves in the process. And as they do that, their blind spots become less apparent because now they see these things, and again, the arena expands. That fourth area, that lower right-hand quadrant, called the potential, you don't know it, and I don't know it. Tomorrow, the client's going to get promoted. They didn't know it. I didn't know it. Okay? Tomorrow, the client's going to get hit by a bus. They didn't know it. I didn't know it. That area can't grow necessarily because it's not something the universe can control. But as a coaching relationship, our goal is to help that arena grow so the clients knows more about themselves, we know more about them, and there's open and clear communication between ourselves and the clients. DISC plays into this because with a DISC assessment, I can already see some things about them they may not see about themselves. Likewise, as they read the report and the assessment, they may say aha and see things about themselves they wouldn't necessarily have said before to automatically expand the arena. This model plays well to both DISC and to coaching and plays into what we're going to be doing here over the next five sessions together. So questions about this? This is covered more thoroughly, I believe, in your document, in your reading document.
Right.
So, you know, read through that. But I use this model with clients to see what we're trying to accomplish and how we're going to do it.
So on the potential quadrant, though, it seems like that never really shrinks or grows because it's always just this unknown bundle.
It's the tomorrow that never comes, right? It's the unknown. That likely won't grow much, but the mask should shrink, the blind spots should shrink, and the arena should enlarge as you coach someone longer and longer.
Okay, so eventually the arena is going to, if everything goes well, to be a big L shape.
Exactly, yeah. One quadrant left there, you have the everything is in the arena, and the unknown potential, everything else is just arena. All right.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty. Thanks.
Okay. Other questions before I go on?
All right.
So the last page you see in this document, besides one of those questions, is what's called the behavioral style chart. It's got the DISC on there and all those arrows on there. Now, this piece of paper is critically important for you to understand DISC. You're going to see it in the handouts virtually every week. It's going to be in there still. It's a simple model of how DISC works. We'll cover it more thoroughly starting our session on Wednesday night. But I'll tell you a couple of key things about it here. One is to understand that those lines on there are arrows. The arrows represent two things. First, they show degree. Notice that the arrow right in the middle, between active and thoughtful, that shows a degree. How active am I versus how thoughtful am I? Likewise, across the middle, task-oriented versus people-oriented, how far there do I fall? This plays directly into DISC, because you and I both may be a high D style, but your D may be much higher than mine. So you'll show much more of those D tendencies than I will. Even though both say, yeah, we're both high Ds. Well, yeah, but you're a bigger D than I am. Okay? It also shows the opposites here, and that's important as well. Notice that the D and the S are opposites. One is active and task-oriented. The other is thoughtful and people-oriented. Exact opposites. Likewise, the I, active and people-oriented, versus the C, thoughtful and task-oriented. So this plays off a few different ways inside of our discussions on DISC. Those discrepancies can cause D's and S's to really dislike each other, or I's and C's to really dislike each other, because they're very much opposite. However, once people become aware of these tendencies, they can see the value of the different styles, they can begin to adapt themselves and make and understand that other style better and value them more and help improve that relationship back and forth. So I'm going to tell you guys, this chart, I say, is the key to using DISC. Here's my personal advice to you. Learn to draw this chart by hand. And when you're talking to potential clients about use of DISC, draw the chart as you talk them through it. What I personally discovered over the years was I had these things made up in really fancy colors with all kinds of stuff all over them. They really were pretty, and no one cared. But when I could talk my way through it, as I drew the model, people were intrigued. So this is the key document for you to look at. Start worrying now about how to start drawing that yourself and what it means. So by the time you get to the end of class, though, in 3 weeks, you can draw this by hand and walk your way through it, and your clients will be very impressed and want to know more about how DISC can help them. All right, let's see what top of the hour. We had a lot to cover in our first session here. Are there any questions I can answer for you about what we covered here tonight?
In future sessions, will we talk about work versus personal life? Because I know how the chart, the graph came out on myself was, I think, accurate, but probably different than my personal life.
Yeah, the DISC assessment you took here has got a work orientation to it. For most people, it's the same work at home, but not for all. Okay? All the material that has been created, though, by Wiley has got a work orientation to it. The same concepts can apply at home. So if I told you to take the same assessment and said, put yourself in a home environment, take the same assessment. For many of you, it'd be this, you get the same set of charts. If you didn't, you'd see a different style, and that style would be your behavior at home.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome. Other questions?
Yeah, Dave?
Yes.
This is Sarah. My charts are radically different. Each one of them except the I, it's steady. It's one of the things that probably could not measure is job change, because I kept flip-flopping between how I felt at one job versus another job.
Yep.
Is that possible?
Absolutely. And if I was your coach, I'd say, I've got these three different graphs here. What's going on to cause this? And right now you told me what it was. I'd say, okay. Let's talk about how these jobs are affecting you and what you really want.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Sarah.
That's helpful. All right.
Other questions?
I just have a question about the graph. And if you're going to talk about it next week, that's fine. But I'm just interested in looking at that graph and that kind of that blue area in the middle, what that represents.
Ah, okay. That's the midpoint. So what you're looking for in behavioral styles are points that are at or above that blue area. So when I measure your D, I, S, and C, would say what style are you, looking for things that are above that midpoint. Okay?
Okay. And then what if they're in that blue area?
And that puts them in the middle ground. And they're going to impact your behavioral style, but they're not going to be as dramatic as the ones either above or below.
Okay. Got it. Thanks.
We have a big class here, so it's hard to get a lot of questions in. If you guys have questions, though, that you'd like to have answered, then and you don't see it on the syllabus someplace, we're going to cover it in a different session, go ahead and send me an email, and I'll respond to you. I want you guys to learn how to use this and be successful with it. So don't feel constrained by the hour we have here in class. I'm a resource for you guys. If you have questions, send it to me, and I'll try and respond back to you. I am going off to do a funeral the next couple of days here, so maybe a little slower to respond than normal, but I will reply to you. So don't hide your questions. If you have questions, go ahead and ask me. Okay?
Wait, okay. Whose funeral?
Thanks. Sorry?
Whose funeral?
My cousin passed away.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It was rather sudden, and so I've got to do some traveling to go back and say goodbye.
Thanks, Dave. Some good information. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I hope you guys take a chance to, again, read through the catalyst for our next session Wednesday night. Again, if I'm a few minutes late Wednesday, forgive me. The session, or I should be there pretty close to on time, but just in case, I am coming. Oh, I should mention one other thing. The sessions here are being recorded, and they'll be posted up for you guys on a web page. So I'll send the link to you as soon as I get it back from CTA. You'll have all six sessions recorded. You can download them and save them to play them back at your convenience to amuse yourself later. We go with the stuff pretty quickly in 6 hours, so feel free to save those recordings and use them again later. Okay?
Great. Right.
Thanks. Hey, guys.
Thank you.
Have a great evening, and we'll talk to you guys all then Wednesday night.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.